Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us once again. Ryan, I first of all want to talk about your interview with Taylor Hall. I know all the number guys were all excited and were wearing sweatpants after that interview. What did you make of you know, the players, because he said, hey, I don't even understand Corsi and why it changes, because you know, from year to year, from player to player, there can be big discrepancies from year to year.
Yeah, well, I mean, Taylor follows numbers closely, and he's more mainstream statistics that he follows, but he does dive into Corsi a little bit. I'm not sure how much he dives into Fenwick, but we talked a little bit about it, and I think the point that Taylor made is that for it to make sense to a hockey player, for a statistic to make sense to a hockey player, you need to tell them how to improve it. And the problem with Corsi, much like plus-minus, is sometimes it's a little bit out of your hands.
Yeah, quite a bit of the time.
Yeah, it has this ebb and flow to it where some years you might not think you're playing that differently, but you're put in a different situation, or you have a line mate who has different tendencies, or you are asked to be more offensive as opposed to defense. I mean, there's all sorts of things that change. And so, I mean, he follows it. He knew that his Corsi wasn't as good this year as it was last year. But again, there's how do you improve it? And there's no real answer for that. And I think that's where the numbers, while some may find them useful, there's a bit of a drop-off there in terms of their true practicality or their true application in terms of making anybody better. That's not really what they're for. It's an analytic. You analyze it. And Taylor is a numbers guy and dives into that stuff, but obviously doesn't live and die by it.
You look at that game last night, and the Oilers, hey, they're losing Corsi every game. They're getting outshot, but they're 8-3-2 in their last game. They're the Toronto Maple Leafs of the West, which the analytics guys can't understand how they continue to win when they get outshot. And the Oilers, hey, good goaltending will definitely do that for you. Minnesota last night just kind of allowed them to hang around. You know, they got a simple goal by going to the net, and Andrew Ferentz was really instrumental in both the second and the third goals. Even though the team's not playing very well for long stretches of the game, Ryan, it does seem that once they get a sniff, this team still has a lot of confidence in itself.
Well, yeah, once they get the engine going, I think they feel at no point are they out of a hockey game. And that's a really good thing. That's a good trait for a team to develop, that no matter what the score is, whether you're down by one, two, or three, 6 minutes left, whatever, once they fire it into that extra gear, they seem to be able to mount pretty exciting comebacks. They don't always win, but they always have enough in the tank to make it close. So that's the glass half full side of that equation, right? Where you like that trait in a team. The glass half empty side is the no-shows for the first 28 minutes or however long it happens to be. Why this team can't show up on time, I don't understand. I don't understand why they have to back their way into all these hockey games. Why can't they learn the lesson that if they can come up with a little bit of sense of urgency early in a game, they might save themselves a little bit of heartache? They are learning that, and it's taking them a long time to learn that. They do not show up on time. They're gamers when they do, but they don't show up on time.
Biggest thing I noticed last night, Ryan, and it's been a consistent issue all year long, was how much harder the Oilers have to work in the offensive zone to keep a cycle alive compared to the opposing teams. Like the Oilers, Ray Frauer said it, we've said it many times on the show, they can't break up a cycle. They've added a little size in their back end. But I just look at times, like you got Spurgeon, the smallest defenseman in the league, and he gets his body in front of guys and at least makes it hard on them. The Oilers' effort in the defensive zone when they're trying to break up the cycle at times just borders on pathetic.
Yeah, well, you look at the guys that they have in place, and Justin Schultz is all about stick checks, and Jeff Petrie, while at times shows flashes of physicality, certainly doesn't assert himself physically much in the defensive zone. Martin Marinson is still a beanpole, and there's no strength there. Philip Larson is Philip Larson. Andrew Ferentz can only do so much with his size and weight. They're just not built to be a team that breaks up the cycle. They're stick checkers. And that's fundamentally, that's a problem, because a lot of the teams that are successful in the league right now, they're built on that cycle. They're big teams, and that's the way they win games. So it's a fundamental problem. We watch it game in, game out. Happens over and over and over again. And I got to be honest with you, I have a little bit of a concern about the timeline that they're going to improve and get better here. Because if you listen to what Craig McTavish said in one of his, I think it was one of his last two media addresses, he talked about how improving the back end, a lot of it is about development, which means they feel they have what they need in the system to help them turn the corner. But I look at the system and go, okay, so Klefbom, they're giving a look here. Marinson's in the lineup, okay. Nurse is coming. These guys might all be 3 to 4 years away from their peak, from their prime. Now you're getting into Taylor Hall a year away from free agency. Like, they need good defensemen now. They don't have time to let guys that were drafted in the last 2 or 3 years develop into good players. They don't have that time. They need good defensemen now because that's the cycle that this team is on. So sitting around waiting for Gernat and Marinson and Musil and these guys that apparently are coming, they don't have the luxury of that time.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Speaking of, two of those young guys are in the lineup right now. Martin Marinson, his offensive zone play last night, Ryan, where he held on the puck, walked around a few guys, set up Taylor Hall at the buzzer for a great opportunity. I am so impressed by his confidence with the puck and his first outlet pass. Like, Marinson has, I think he's taken leaps and bounds even since he's come to the Oilers this year.
Totally agree. And the thing about it was, when he got here, he just kept it simple. He really, really kept it simple. And what he did is he built a little bit of trust with Steve Smith and with Dallas Eakins, built in a little bit of trust so that they knew they could put him out there and he wasn't going to kill him. And then slowly but surely, he's allowed the offense in his game to come out. And he's showing signs of brilliance in the offensive zone, frankly, precisely what you're talking about last night. But I really have a lot of respect for the way he approached his NHL opportunity. Because some guys might not be able to have that patience to know that that's such a strength in their game, that offense, but to realize I need to build trust. And Dallas made it very clear. I don't care if you don't get a point. You're here to defend. That was what he was brought in to do and told to do in the early going. And now he's pretty competent defending, but he's letting little glimpses of what he's capable of offensively shine in his game. And, boy, it really, really bodes well. He's leaps and bounds ahead of Klefbom right now. We haven't had that much time to look at Klefbom, but just in terms of when you're looking at these guys and thinking who sits where on their overall depth chart, well, Marinson's come in this year and had shown he belongs in the NHL. And the offensive side of it hasn't really even been unleashed yet.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Ryan, looking at Marinson and Klefbom, and yeah, you know, Marinson's played well, but how much of this do the Oilers have to ensure that they just, you know, realize this isn't smoke and mirrors? Like, you got to play better. You can't consistently, you know, expect your goaltenders. I know last night it was only a .903 save percentage, but basically Ben Scrivens is rolling around a .940 to get all these wins. Eventually they've got to realize that you can't just rely on your goaltenders to stand on their head every night.
Well, and that's why I'm concerned. That's why I'm skeptical of how they're going to get better, because, and I'm not sure if he's just trying to lower expectations and maybe, you know, go the opposite direction as opposed to telling everybody all this stuff he's going to do. But Craig McTavish has talked about how it's pretty tough to get those guys, those top pairing guys, through free agency, tough to find those guys, tough to get them in trade, that they want to develop their decor. Like, they're not good enough. They don't have the guys to do that, and they don't have the time to sit around and wait for them. So, they absolutely need to get better. It is a little bit of smoke and mirrors right now. They're finally getting some goaltending. It's making them look like a competitive team, and it's putting lipstick on the pig. And the pig is their defensive game. And that's what needs to change drastically. It needs to change personnel-wise, because while Klefbom might come in and might be ready to go next year as maybe a third-pairing guy, Marinson maybe comes in and can play, who knows, maybe you can play in your second pair next year. And handle some bigger minutes, but they still need top end guys. They still need to find those guys, and it's obvious. It's very, very obvious. So I don't know. I'm not sure what his strategy is. He's done a nice job fixing the goaltending situation, but job number one right now is the defense, and I'm not quite clear on the direction, because if it's sit around and wait for Darnell Nurse or whoever they might take in the first round this year, I don't really like that plan.
No. You can't build with young forwards and all young defensemen. I think it's a recipe for disaster, without a doubt on that one. What did you – Sam Gagner out, Arcabello or Lander, who would you recall?
I think you probably got to give Arcabello a look again. I mean, he's just shooting the lights out. He's just absolutely shooting the lights out down there. And I think – I just don't know if you can ignore that kind of production. So I think you probably have to bring him in. Lander apparently has been real good too. I can't profess to have seen any of their games, but the numbers are good. He's point a game or better. But Arcabello, I mean – Richard said that he was just too good for the league right now. So I think he's probably earned his opportunity, don't you?
Well, yes and no. I think, is Mark Arcabello a guy for the future of the Edmonton Oilers? And if he isn't part of the future, then I would call up, I would have Anton Lander, who you think maybe is part of the future and could at very least be your fourth line center next season, right? Now, if they think Arcabello is better suited to be the fourth line guy, then recall him. But whoever they think is going to be here next year, that's who you recall, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I guess with Sam Gagner being banged up, I would just think that they might be looking for somebody to slot in at that number two center spot, right? And that's why it might make more sense for Arcabello. And he's got 26 points in 13 games in the minors this year.
Yep.
And you're looking for an offensive center so that you don't sputter offensively. Otherwise, you go Boyd Gordon on your second line, Anton Lander is your third line center, and you stay with Ryan Smith as your fourth line center. Now you've got Boyd Gordon, who hasn't put up much in the way of numbers in a long, long time here, centering two offensive players. So I guess just from the standpoint of where the fit is, might make more sense for Arcabello. But they are playing Ryan Smith in the middle, so that right there should be reason to have Lander here.
Would you re-sign Ryan Smith to a one-year contract?
Good question. I wouldn't do it until – I certainly wouldn't do it before July 1st. I would certainly wait and see what other options come your way. If I didn't have a better option, I would. I would think he would be an okay option to bring back. But I think they need to look for ways to bring some fresh faces in and some upgrades. And I think if they can upgrade, then they need to. So – he wouldn't be first on my list, put it that way. I would probably look to go younger, look to go a little bit different, and see if you can do that. But I think if they end up with Ryan Smith back here last year or next year, I don't think it's going to be their main problem. Ryan's shown that he can keep some youth in his legs, and he's still pretty valuable on the penalty kill. I guess that's kind of putting it on the fence a little bit, but it's tough to know what else is available because I do think they need to upgrade. How about you? I can't believe we were even talking about it. Remember last year?
Yeah.
You were talking about it was done.
Well,
done.
A lot of people said he was, and I politely told people, go back and look at the history of lockouts and who struggles the most, veterans, because they don't stay in the same shape, and I think they struggle more than other guys because of it. I would look at Smith. I'll tell you this. I would take Ryan Smith over Jesse Uwensu. I would take Ryan Smith over Ryan Jones. And so, you know, are you going to find two other free agent wingers that you can sign that are automatically better? I'd have to go back. I'd have to look up the list. At least with Smith, you know what you're getting. Penalty kill guy, plays the power play, could be 5-on-5, fourth line guy.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he is as a winger. And if need be, in an injury situation for a game, I guess he could mop up center duties if you lose some centermen, which is fine.
Yeah.
So I would consider it 1 year at $1.5 million or $1 million. Yeah, I'd look at it.
Yeah. There's a couple of other guys, too, that I would like to see get opportunities. Like, and maybe it's in the Ryan Jones spot or
Like Tyler Pitt, like I would take over Jesse Uwensu next season.
Yeah, that's the name I was just about to say. I'd like to see Tyler Pitlick from the start of the year get a bit of a different look because I thought he did well when he came up and played. So I'd like to see that player get a little bit of a look. So that's what I mean. It depends what else is out there. It depends what they get done at the draft, if there's any trades that happen there. If they, it depends on what their top six forwards look like and the skill set in there. So what I'm saying is I don't think you need to rush to sign him. I think you can wait, let things flesh out a little bit, and then if there's a spot, there's a spot. You sign him.
Oh.
If there's not and he decides that enough is enough, then I think Ryan Smith probably has a position within the organization in some way, shape, or form if he wants it.
Yeah, like if you look at left wingers who would fit into the fourth line, there's, now they could upgrade, I guess, and maybe push someone else down, but right now, you've got like Tanner Glass or Daryl Powell or Blake Como or Daniel Carcillo or Tim Kennedy, Paul Bissonnette, and I would argue that Smith is better than all of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not many, like, free agent left wingers for guys who fit into that role. There aren't any that I see that are better than Ryan Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just quickly pulling up the list, too, and there's – I mean, I just don't think you need to rush to make –
No. I never said you sign him before July 1st because we know that, you know, he'd rather sign in Edmonton than anywhere else. So you use that to your advantage once rather than rush and sign guys ahead, which seems to be Edmonton's M.O. too often.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying I don't see a free agent. Like, if they're bringing a fourth-line left winger who's better than Smith, it likely comes from a trade.
Yeah, I mean, that fourth-line left wing spot is ideal to bring your 22-year-old – you know, the guy that was your whoever, someone within the organization, like a Pitlick's a perfect example, although it plays the other side, but perfect example. Those are the positions you use to give opportunities to your young guys that are trying to make the jump and trying to, it can be energy players, physical players. Those are the kinds of guys I think you want in those types of positions, if you're the Oilers anyways. So we'll see. They've got decisions to make on a few guys, but I agree with you. I take them ahead of both Jones and Uentu as well.
Shocker, we'll talk to you later this week.
Okay, buddy. Have a great day.